owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Mueller Garcia. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. Now, I know our American Warrior Radio listeners to be sharp, dagger, tip of the spear sharp. So we're going to start off today with a quiz. They were formally established as a unit in 1952, but their heritage, tactics, and theories of warfare go much, much further back. Their motto is De Oppresso Liber, to liberate the oppressed. Maybe the only special forces unit to have a song about them spend 5 weeks at number one on the Billboard charts. They adopted their distinctive headgear in 1954 after a group of soldiers searching through their accumulated collection settled on one color. In 1961, President Kennedy authorized it for use exclusively as a symbol of excellence, a badge of courage, and a mark of distinction in the fight for freedom. Now, that last one probably gave it away. We are, of course, referring to the Green Berets. And today we're going to be talking with a member of that elite organization who now leads another organization dedicated to addressing the gaps in immediate and continuing support for these soldiers and their families. Our guest today served as a communications sergeant with the 5th Special Forces Group and deployed in support of Operation Enduring Freedom to Afghanistan, where he earned a Bronze Star. In 2019, he accepted the position as executive director of the Green Beret Foundation. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Mr. Brent Cooper.
Hey, Ben, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, it's going to be a pleasure. I tell you, I beefed up for today's talk.
Good. Hey, I'm ready. I'm excited about talking about whatever you want to talk about today.
Well, let's start off by talking about Brent. I did some research, Brent. The average age for an enlisted Green Beret is 29 years old. So Brent Cooper decides at the ripe old age of 30 to jump in, literally and figuratively.
I would say not uncommon, but a bit unconventional. You know, I spent all of my 20s kind of chasing the corporate ladder, climbing the corporate ladder. And then by the time I hit 30, you know, 30 comes quickly. And I had always wanted to serve and just decided, hey, if I don't do this now, I'm probably never going to. This is a regret I'm going to have.
Now, what year are we talking about, Brent?
2009.
Okay.
2009 is when I joined, signed the contract, signed on the dotted line, and then left for basic training in 2010, you know, at 30 years old. I actually needed to get an age waiver because at the time, the contract I had signed, which enabled me the opportunity to make it to Special Forces assessment and selection, you had to be, you had to sign it prior to your 30th birthday.
Now, the 18 X-ray program, that's a special pipeline. Explain to our listeners what that's about.
Yeah. You know, in a nutshell, what it is, it's guaranteed slots, but not guaranteed outcomes. It enables individuals off the street, for lack of a better term, to go to infantry basic training, go to airborne school, go to other training. And as long as you make it through all of that training, you have the opportunity to go to Special Forces assessment and selection, which then you obviously still have to pass. And if you pass that, then you get into the Special Forces qualification course, which is another, 18 to 24 months, depending on your military occupation specialty of what you're going to do.
Now, once someone completes the Special Operations Qualification Course, are you then authorized to wear the Green Beret or not quite yet?
That is when you are authorized to wear the Green Beret. Yeah, once, and they coined it as just the Q course for short. So once you graduate the Q course. So, yeah, so my first 2 years was essentially just all training, from basic training to airborne school, other prep and conditioning courses, selection, Q course. So as long as you don't get injured or quit or anything like that, then you have an opportunity to get to selection.
Now, Brent, I have to ask the question, why? At that age, you were building a life in the corporate world pretty successful. You were on your way up. Why did you decide it was time to serve your country, and why the special forces versus just, I don't know, being a clerk typist somewhere?
Yeah, Ben, those are good questions. You know, really to summarize that, for me, I had always wanted to serve my country. I think I didn't grow up in a military family, so I never had this push to, like, this was really an option. I think it evolved over time. You know, 9/11 happened. You know, that kind of got planted in me as far as, hey, this is maybe something I should do, but I didn't do it. Years kept passing by, and I finally decided, hey, I want to serve something greater than myself. Like, I was just chasing all the wrong things, wanted to serve something greater than myself, serve our country. And so I decided Special Forces. When I was doing my research, I looked at a lot of the branches, and I thought to myself, you know, I felt like in the corporate world, I was already working with some of the best. And so in the military world, I'm like, hey, I want to work with the best, be among the best. And for me, when I was doing the research, it was U.S. Army Special Forces. And I think what I liked most about their mission, and a lot of individuals don't understand this about Green Berets specifically, is they're warrior diplomats. Mm-hmm. You know, they are really going into austere environments, doing humanitarian things. You know, it is kind of more communicate first to resolve issues and shoot second, for lack of a better way of saying it, you know. So I really like that warrior diplomat mentality and the mission of the Green Berets, which is why I chose them.
Now, had you completed your college degree prior to this, or did you finish that up while you were in active duty?
Well, interestingly, I had 2 years completed before I joined the military. Before I got out, I finished my bachelor's before I got out. And then right after I got out, I went on to pursue my MBA.
Okay. I thought that maybe you might have considered Special Forces because later in life you became the president of your homeowners association. And, you know, those can get pretty sporty, Brent. So I thought maybe.
Yeah. That's funny, too. Yeah.
Hey, no disrespect to clerk typists. I mean, I know everybody has a job to do. But I'm always curious about the people, because I've heard this before. It's like, look, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it with the best. I want to serve with the best. You know, whatever that might be, it might be Delta, it might be SEALs, or in your case, the Green Berets.
Yeah, and I think that's just my mentality. I grew up, you know, always playing sports, very athletic, very competitive. So I think that competitive spirit, you know, helped me significantly. So my transition as far as the physical aspect of everything wasn't that daunting. It really was the mental aspect. And I tell people this all the time. It's not the biggest, strongest, fastest that become Green Berets. It's the individuals that don't quit, right? Their minds are just built a little differently. And for a lot of guys out there in training, it's, hey, you know, this might be direct, but they literally, the mentality is, I'm going to die before I quit. And so, and many Green Berets have that same philosophy, and that's why we work so well on the team together, because we all understand how strong and sharp our minds are.
Now, Brent, you're in the corporate world, you leave the corporate world to serve our nation, then you're back to the corporate world. I think you were doing some real estate. What brought you to the Green Beret Foundation? Because, I mean, you seem, you know, on paper, perfect fit.
Yeah. Funny you say that, because I thought that to myself too, not to pat myself on the back, but I was hoping everyone else with the board of directors would see that as well. Yeah, I got out in 2015, decided for family reasons to get out, you know, moved up to Washington State, started, you know, back on the corporate trail. And I think for me, long story short, you know, I started chasing money again, and it just wasn't fulfilling for me at the time. And I really underestimated how much I missed serving something greater than myself. And so when this position became open, the executive director position for the foundation, my wife is actually the one that found it. And she said, Brent, check this out. And I looked at it, and it literally been the 20-year culmination of my life, from corporate to military, back to corporate, schooling, everything made sense. I don't know any other better way to say it, but it's like everything in the last 20 years of my life made sense in that moment. And I said, this is a position that seems perfect. It blends my business experience, my special forces experience. I understand the family dynamics of Green Berets and what they go through, deployment cycles. And it was my way of wanting to jump back in to the special forces regiment and being able to help all my brothers and sisters and their families.
Well, Brent, you might get this, you might not then, but I'm not a believer that, things happen randomly. I think they happen for a reason. When we come back from the break, I want to take that next step. Ladies and gentlemen, to understand the foundation and its purpose, you have to understand the community it serves. We'll talk a little bit more about the Green Beret mentality when we come back with Brent Cooper, the executive director of the Green Beret Foundation. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Brent Cooper. Brent is a former Green Beret. He is now the executive director of the Green Beret Foundation. You can learn more, visit greenberetfoundation.org. Brent, in doing my show prep, I came across a video that I think is relatively new. Now, you've only been in charge there for going on a year, correct? Maybe a little bit longer?
I started June 2019, so just over a year, yeah.
Okay. And in this video, a very powerful piece, by the way, but in this video, one of the lines that one of your, I don't know if clients is the right word, but they say, you know, the stuff you hear whispers about, those are the things we are doing. And I can't think of a better description of the Green Berets and what they do. Before we get into what your organization does, I think people need to understand, because your focus is very narrow on a very specific community, but there's a reason for that, Brent, I'm guessing. The highest casualty rate in the Special Forces community, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct. Since 9/11, 60% of all casualties have been sustained by Green Berets underneath the Special Operations umbrella.
You touched on the fact, and one thing I find fascinating, and maybe a little story, I was in a dining establishment, and there was a group of young men seated around the table. I could tell they were military, and the owner was chatting with a friend of mine who was also former military, and a long story short, Brent, eventually he turns to me and says, "Wow, do you know who that is?" And I said, "I have no idea who that is." He says, "Well, that's Delta." And I remember my first thought was, gee, they're smaller than I thought they would be. But I've often heard, coming back to the special operators, the idea of brains to complement brawn. When you're training to be a Green Beret, one of the language specialty is something that I think is probably very unique in that community. Who determines what you are taught and where you go after that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a huge differentiator as far as the Green Berets to others, as opposed to some of the other special operations units in other branches, is that we are trained to speak a foreign language. And that foreign language is actually determined very early on your entrance exam when you're signing up for the military. You take this test. It's like a fake language test, right? It's essentially just to test your aptitude for foreign language. And so I ended up scoring pretty well on it. And unbeknownst to me, I take the test, go to basic training, get through all of this stuff, and then I figure out that they assigned me Arabic to learn because my aptitude test I scored high on early on. You know, looking back, I'm like, man, and then your language that you have determines which special forces group that you typically are assigned to. Because every special forces group that we have across the country is essentially assigned to a specific location around the world. That's kind of their area of operation.
Brent, far be it for me to doubt the judgment of our United States government on occasion, but I remember when I wanted to go in the Air Force and I wanted to be a pilot, the recruiter said I scored highest in aptitude to be an engineer, and I was not a math guy. My suspicion was they needed engineers more than they needed pilots at the time. My brother, similar thing to you, he already spoke two languages, and his aptitude happened to be quote-unquote Arabic just before we went into Desert Storm. But let's just leave it at that. The idea, then, are you stuck then in that region of the world for the rest of your career, or can they send you back and teach you a different language?
They can, but I would say as a generalization, you know, one nice thing about Special Forces, once you get assigned to a group, you know, you can pretty much spend the rest of your career at that group. You know, you might go somewhere else and come back, but for the most part, you're not being, shipped around to tons of different bases as like the conventional Army usually type it is.
I, Brent, saw you on a segment of a little YouTube video called Veterans React to Action Movies. And I won't mention the name of that coffee company because they're not an advertiser. But, you were really, praising Bloodsport because you thought that was such an accurate action movie ever. But in all seriousness, we've had Doug Stanton, the author of Horse Soldiers, on the show. That became the movie 12 Strong. How, in your opinion, how accurate was that a good representation of sort of the combination of diplomat warrior role that the Green Berets often play?
Yeah, I'll say I love movies. I've always loved movies. I really did like the movie 12 Strong. I think there's absolutely some very factual elements in there that depict the special forces lifestyle and how they operate very well. There's obviously some cinematic and stuff that Hollywood always has to put in there, but I'd say for the most part, yeah, fantastic movie.
It's not unusual that, especially when we're talking to someone like you, Brent, that we get into an area that we're not supposed to be, so I suspect you won't be shy about telling me you can't answer that. One of the things that, as a civilian on the outside looking in with a little bit of knowledge about history, that strikes me as intriguing, I guess I'll say, about that situation. So we go in, we train these insurgents in Afghanistan to fight the Soviets, and then did we end up fighting those same dudes ourselves a decade down the road, or am I making an assumption that's not necessarily accurate, or can you not answer that?
No, I mean, that's not necessarily inaccurate, but yeah, we are going into these type of environments, and we are, and that's what our mission is. We essentially, it's a 12-man ODA, Operational Detachment Alpha, where you got 12 guys on this team, and now gals, since females can become Green Berets, 12-man teams going into these environments, right, austere environments, and essentially they're training their partner force. We call it our partner force, and training these individuals in order to overthrow, the dictatorship or the oppression that their community is under. And so we act as force multipliers, train the trainer type thing, where we're giving them the ability and empowering them to make their communities better. And so, to your point, yeah, I can tell you now that I'm out, I spent my time in northern Afghanistan, in Kunduz province. And, you think about a third world country, and it really is eye opening once you go over there. And you're driving down the road and you see them living in huts and dirt floors, right? And you think in the back of your mind of all the luxuries of Western civilization, and, it's able to change your perspective one degree. And I always think if you can change people's perspective one degree, it's a monumental shift in how they look at everything else in life. So,
with all due respect to you, Brent, so far up until today, my favorite Green Beret we've ever had on the show is a guy by the name of Frank Antonori. He wrote just a great book, and we had a fun chat about a certain exercise that takes place in here in our country. And one of the stories he told there was during Robin Sage, as part of his training, he and his partner, whatever you would call it, they were hungry, so they stole a farmer's chicken and ate the farmer's chicken. Well, part of the paperwork after that exercise was all the paperwork to the government to reimburse that farmer for that chicken that these two Green Berets plucked out of his barn and ate. Did you ever have any of those sort of, this is just too crazy to believe moments during your service?
Well, you're spot on about Robin Sage, and Robin Sage is the culmination exercise of the Special Forces Qualification Course. All the training combined at the end is the final test, and you basically simulate what it is like getting deployed into a foreign country and having to, become allies with the individuals in there and train the force and everything. As far as the training, yeah, absolutely. Chickens, roadkill, anything you can get your hands on. For me, I would say one of the funniest moments for me I had as a new guy on a team, right? Because I'm a new guy on a team. I show up, and I'm already a little bit older than the rest of the guys on the team. But I'm still the new guy, right? Keep your head down, keep your mouth shut, and learn from them. And we get deployed, and one of the first missions I remember going on, and as a commo guy, I'm in charge of all the radios, getting the trucks ready, the communications ready. And I remember this road, this dirt road that we would have to drive in and out of. And it wasn't much wider. This bridge actually wasn't much wider than the trucks we had. And we had these big MRAPs. Imagine a Humvee on steroids. These MRAPs that we had were 500, $1 million vehicles, you know, 18 tons, 9 feet high. And it's like, hey, you're driving this. It's like, okay. I remember driving over this bridge, and we had done it numerous times. And I was usually in the lead vehicle with our detachment commander, the officer who's, you know, always on the radio. Because if anything, if his radio goes down, that's a bad thing. So they always put the commo guy with him. And I remember going over this bridge, and I remember feeling like all of a sudden we were on ice and the bridge gave way. I had cut it too close. The bridge, the dirt gave way because of the weight of the truck. We ended up in the river on our side, completely horizontal. And here I am, right as the new guy, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just rolled this $1 million military vehicle. We're sitting there, water's starting to filter in. So obviously the other vehicles that we had with us on this mission, we all have to stop. Everybody gets out, full security. Villagers are coming in from all over the place looking at what's going on. We're getting out of the truck. Imagine it's still on its side. Water's coming in. And we're trying to get the hundreds of thousands of dollars of communication equipment out of there and the computer systems and whatnot. All that to say, you know, I'm sitting there just shaking my head. I'm like, I can't believe this happened to me. I can't believe this happened to me. And the guys have never let me live it down to this day.
Sure.
We ended up having to call our German friends, German, you know, special forces equivalent, were stationed in close proximity to us, and they came out and they had this incredible vehicle that essentially just towed it right out.
Well, Brent, I'll tell you, that's a fine how do you do for the new guy, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I got riled for that for a long time.
It's one thing to pay a farmer for his chicken. It's another to pay a village for their bridge.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm thinking, I'm like, I just rolled a $1 million military vehicle. I hope this thing's okay. Luckily it was. luckily it was. But it could have been worse, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, they do their work quiet and in the shadows because that's how they survive in battle. But that doesn't do them any good when they come home. We come back, we'll talk more with Brent Cooper, the executive director of the Green Beret Foundation, about what they're doing to address the gaps in support for these elite families. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Brent Cooper. Brent is a former Green Beret, also the executive director of the Green Beret Foundation. You can learn more at greenberetfoundation.org. Brent, the reason this show exists is to provide a bridge across the understanding, the gap of understanding communication between civilians and the military and first responder community. I'm guessing one of the things that a lot of civilians out there think is if you're a Green Beret and you're injured or you're killed, the government's going to take care of everything, no more worries in the world, but that's just not the case, is it?
That's correct. Military insurance and the VA, they do a good job in a lot of areas, but just like any other insurances, like certain things are not covered. And that's where Green Beret Foundation comes in and fills in a lot of those gaps.
Now, something that's unique about you, Brent, is you're, again, as I started at the top of the show, your mission set is strictly focused on Green Berets and their families, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
And how many, over the course of the existence of the foundation, can you give me an idea how many families have been helped and about what you've invested in those families?
Yeah, absolutely. The foundation began in 2009, so it's not that, old. Going on 11 years now, and since inception, the foundation has invested $15 million, just over $15 million into our programs and services, which has helped nearly 13,000 Green Beret families since 2009.
Wow.
So an incredible impact that we've been able to have on this community.
And this is a relatively small segment of our military.
Yes, absolutely. I believe, you know, around 7,000 active duty Green Berets. So it is a relatively small niche, right? But these are the individuals that are first in, you know, kind of last out on these missions. And you had mentioned, you know, the stuff you hear whispers about that was mentioned in our new video. And, you know, the Green Berets, they do, they coin themselves the quiet professionals. That's kind of one of our things that we say who we are. And it's because we just don't talk about what we do. It's kind of ingrained in us not to talk about it, you know, doing these things. And we are kind of doing things that you read about or you kind of hear whispers about. And the Green Berets are actually doing that. And I think for me, just because we're quiet professionals, we don't have to be silent. I think it's important that people understand what it is we do.
You know, Brandon, it's interesting you made me think about that. In some of the previous shows we've done, we've had other guests that say, well, it's sort of ingrained in us as members of the military, and you embrace the suck, right? Mm-hmm. If things go wrong, too bad, that's what you signed up for. But I love that line from your video that it doesn't do us any good when we come home. And really, that is the role that your organization plays, as you're standing up to be the voice, to be the advocate for quiet professionals who might be more inclined to say, well, you know, too bad, that's the way it is, I'll just embrace the suck.
Yeah, and you know, Ben, how Green Berets are trained and going through it, we're trained the right way as far as being able to endure those things, embrace the suck, do what it takes to get the mission done so you can come home. And that is absolutely imperative and ingrained in us. Be able to compartmentalize things, right? These are all traits that are fantastic to have in the military. But when these guys come home, those are not traits that are good for the family dynamic, good for your mental health. And so for me, you know, spending 3/4 of my professional career in the civilian side and now 1/4 of my career in the military, you know, I understand this dynamic and how important it is to assimilate back into civilian life.
Let's talk I want to talk about a little bit about that, because I want to get into some of the – again, I encourage people to visit greenberetfoundation.org to get a better idea of the broad scope of the programs that your organization offers. But that's something that really struck me, is that you're in a brotherhood. You're in an organization that is about as tight and as trusting as it gets, and then all of a sudden, you're out. I mean, night and day, blink, and it's over. And you can't, I think, again, in that video, you say this can't be replicated in a civilian career. There is no like transition to something in the civilian world. How important is it for someone like you who has been there, done that, understands it, to be leading the charge to help those who have also walked that path?
I think it's imperative. I think it's imperative because to truly lead with empathy and sympathy, you have to have experienced it firsthand. You have to have experienced what these individuals go through on a day-to-day basis, what their families go through, what they endure, to truly understand it. Not saying as other people can't, but that's how I view it.
Brent, I want to get into some of the individual areas that where you engage with these families. And I tell you, one thing that struck me is we've had Gold Star mom, Scotty Domey, on. Her son, Christopher, was the most deployed Ranger in history to ever be killed in action. And Scott, you know, it's interesting. Scotty is just a wonderful woman. And she told me the only time I feel at home is when I'm with his fellow Rangers, because no one else understands. And I sort of get that vibe with you guys. Let's talk about there's certain areas, programs that you offer: casualty support, extended support, family support, Gold Star surviving families. I want to talk first about casualty support, because that is that's the one that I'm glad exists and breaks my heart at the very same time. Green Beret is severely injured. He's put on a airplane to Landstuhl, Germany. What happens at that point at the Green Beret Foundation? What wheels start turning, Brent?
Yeah, we have a lot of fantastic support system volunteers behind the scenes, right? So when something like that happens, we get notified very quickly. We'll usually get notified sometimes before even the family gets notified, right? And so we start getting wheels in motion as far as if you go on our website, you'll see, you know, we want to reach out, and we've teamed up with Go Ruck. We pack a ruck full of shirts, tearaway pants, stuff that this soldier can actually wear, right? They arrive to the hospital with just their uniform on. It's usually bloodied and torn and horrible. And so we immediately overnight this bag to them along with a $2,500 check. We're in touch with the family to see who potentially we could get on a plane to visit them bedside. And again, the military does cover, right, certain individuals to make sure they get to the bedside of the soldier, but not everybody. What happens if they've got children at home that can't travel, or a family pet at home, and what are they going to do now, right? And so, you know, we'll handle all the background logistics. We'll fly mother-in-law or grandma in to watch the children so the spouse can then fly to bedside. We'll kennel a dog. We'll pay to kennel a dog, right? Because then what happens to the family pet? So there's all these, really, that's just an example of all these things that go on when tragedy happens that sometimes you don't really think about, that completely ruin your day-to-day routine, and these dots have to be connected somehow.
And I encourage people, you know, imagine yourself literally right now as you're listening to this show and something happens and you have to go to the hospital for a loved one. But imagine you're in Colorado Springs and the hospital is in Germany and you need to be there now. What do you do? I mean, and you're in that mindset where you're not thinking about, I mean, you might be thinking about a toothbrush, but you're not thinking about the dogs and cats and the electric bill that needs to be paid and all that stuff. So let me, Brent, Ben gets at least one dumb question every show, and here's my dumb question for you. In the support organizations that I'm involved with for the military, we always have a, let's just say a special challenge when it comes to the military lawyers. How do you get away with giving someone a $2,500 check? Or should we not talk about that?
Well, it's not something that we don't necessarily talk about. But
okay.
But we get notified. It's something we're still able to do.
Enough said.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. What other, you'll ship vehicles. Is there anything you won't do to accomplish the mission for these families?
Not that I can think of. We will find a way. And if we can't directly provide the support, whether it's monetary, if it's monetary support, you know, that's where we team up with other organizations, collaborate with them in order to point somebody and help connect those dots to provide them the support that they need.
Outstanding. And Brent, I'll tell you, when we come back, I want to talk more about these programs, because in my day job, I am involved with a lot of nonprofits. And one thing that really stands out to me about your organization is that idea of collaboration. I think it's just outstanding. We come back and want to talk more about those programs and how you're doing it. Ladies and gentlemen, here's your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Brent Cooper, the executive director of the Green Beret Foundation. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're chatting with Brent Cooper. Brent is the executive director at the Green Beret Foundation. You can learn more, visit greenberetfoundation.org. Just like the spirit of the Green Berets, this foundation, ladies and gentlemen, is doing a ton of stuff with only 4 full-time employees. And again, Brent, congratulations. As sort of a nonprofit guy, I loved how efficient you are and how careful you are with the donations that people give you.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Ben. And it's sometimes not popular when I say, you know, as a nonprofit, we're not in business to employ people. We're in business to fulfill a mission, and a great mission. And with that, it's our fiduciary responsibility to be able to succeed at doing that mission with the least amount of resources possible, right? Because the more money that we can spend on the soldiers is really what it's all about.
Brent, coming back to the programs you offer, one of the other categories is extended support. And this, I think, really gets into the area where you're filling gaps that TRICARE or the VA is not addressing for some of these special soldiers, including hyperbaric oxygen therapy, aphasia therapy, which I'd never even heard of until today's show, alpha stim, which is for anxiety and depression. Coming back to the collaboration part of things, Brent, have you heard of Soldier Strong, and have you ever reached out to them about partnering on some of the stuff they're doing?
I feel like I have heard about them, but I have not been in touch with anybody at their organization.
I'll tell you what, I'll send you the contact person there. They're doing some amazing things with robotics and literally exoskeletons that are helping people walk again. It's a superb organization, and I'll put you in touch with them. Let's talk a little bit about the non-physical support, the idea of family support. You've got a great organization called Steel Mags. Love the name, love what they do. Tell us about the Steel Mags.
Yeah, the Steel Mags is comprised of wives, sisters, mothers, daughters of Green Berets, right? A type of sorority, if you will, kind of boots on the ground that play an integral part in being able to, one, inform us of when things are going on. They do fundraising initiatives for us. And they're broken out into chapters, basically, a chapter at every Special Forces group. So a lot of what they have as well, as far as for their group, a support system, an incredible support system that these ladies have when the soldiers are deployed, when they're home. So the Steel Mag is a phenomenal program that we have underneath our family support program.
And you don't, it's not, when we talk about family, it's also intergenerational. Your foundation also offers scholarships, I assume, for the children of these elite soldiers. Is it just for soldiers who have been killed in action, or is it for any child of a Green Beret family?
Any child of a Green Beret. We have a scholarship program specifically designed for non-commissioned officers, warrant officers, and officers, children of each three of those. So, and we're also coming out soon with a scholarship program, hopefully for the spouses as well.
And, you know, we touched on the Gold Star aspect of this. As you mentioned yourself, Brent, this is the military unit with the highest casualty rate of all the special forces in our nation. So on occasion, it's going to be the ultimate sacrifice. And if folks go to your website, they can see the initiatives that you have to support Gold Stars and surviving families. Once again, putting on my nonprofit hat, the one thing I love about that is you're not in a good mental place when this happens. And you, bang, 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 navigating the bureaucracy, support guides, documentation, everything they need to know, bang, right there in one step. Plus, I'm assuming some human support as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Our website has a plethora of fantastic information to go through. But I think what we have, which is phenomenal, is our Gold Star liaison, who's Krista Simpson Anderson. And she's actually one of our board members as well, but she serves as our Gold Star liaison. She has been for years, and she actually is a Gold Star spouse. She is now remarried to another Green Beret. So she is immersed. She understands this community. She has been through what these Gold Star families endure. So as soon as something tragedy strikes, Krista is in touch with the appropriate individuals and helps these families, these individuals, navigate through the arduous process a lot of times of the benefits and what they're entitled to, not entitled to, et cetera. So it's a great resource that we provide.
Brent, from worst case scenario to best case scenario, and I think this may be, correct me if I'm wrong, this may be the newest addition to your portfolio of services. I did my 20 years, my 10 years, my 5 years, whatever it is, and now I'm ready to move on to the civilian world, but I need some help with that transition. And your organization is also helping folks to do that, correct?
Yeah, the transition piece is, you know, just as important as all of them, except the transition piece, we're really putting a lot of focus on this one lately because, one, you know, the 20-year anniversary of 9/11 is coming up. And when you think about when 9/11 strike, a lot of people joined. So 20 years is coming up. And I think over the next 5 years, there's going to be a lot of people transitioning out of the military, retiring, essentially, you know, that joined back then. So when you look at how important transitioning is, we understand, and this isn't knocking the military's, you know, transition piece that you have to go through when you get out, but I don't think it's as enough, right? So we understand what it takes to connect the dots from a soldier that wants to get out of the military. Where do they want to go next in life? What's their next ridgeline? What's the next phase? Do they want to go into trades, a craft, you know, or corporate world? And so we help them connect those dots in order to get them to where they want, in addition to helping them with their benefits, you know, their VA benefits as they're getting out as well.
Brent, we've had Bo Derek on the show, and you're probably too young to remember her, but her father was a Green Beret, served in Vietnam, and she's an honorary Green Beret. I'll admit, I was jealous. And then I went to your website, and I found the ambassador program, which is really cool. I was looking at that. I was going to apply, but then I saw you needed a photo, and I thought, I got a face for radio, so that won't work. But there is that's a very unique way that some of us who were civilians who never served can still jump in and support, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Our ambassador program is phenomenal, and you do not have to be a Green Beret. In fact, you know, since I've been running the organization, I thought it was best. It's like, hey, this can be open to anybody, because there is a lot of individuals that I know on the civilian side that love our military, love Green Berets, that would be incredible advocates to our mission and what we're doing. And at the end of the day, like you said earlier, you know, we got four people on staff that are W-2, right? We do have a lot of volunteers and the board of directors and a lot of people that that are required in order to help us fulfill our mission and spreading the word about what we do. And that ambassador program is a great way to do that.
Well, maybe I'll get a facelift and reapply, but it's a cool program. I encourage folks to look into it. Visit greenberetfoundation.org. Brent, we're out of time. We've got just about a minute left. In your military career, adapt and overcome is so important for Green Berets. What do you see as sort of the adapt and overcome for your foundation going forward here in the near term?
You know, I'm glad you asked that. I would say we're really making a very concerted effort on helping break the stigma on mental health. I think Green Berets are so exceptionally trained at compartmentalizing things. And like that video stated, you know, when it comes home, it doesn't do us any good to be able to have that. So we're doing a lot of efforts right now on breaking the stigma, helping guys with mental health, PTS, wanting to talk about it. And that's, for me, what's extremely important. And what I believe I bring to the table is that empathetic and sympathetic thing. Guys want to talk about issues that are going on in their lives, you know, matters of the heart. Let's talk about it. Let's get better.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Brent, thank you for what you did and for what you continue to do. Folks, learn more. Visit greenberetfoundation.org. I'll tell you, to me, the most wonderful scene from that video is when a Green Beret says what you've done allows his wife to trust him again. Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast and others can be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Find us on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're everywhere. Please listen to these stories and share them with your friends and associates. That's what we are all about here at American Warrior Radio. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.